This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine. Still ahead this hour, a look at a state program that compensates hunters who have lost dogs to wolves while hunting other animals, even if those hunters violated certain laws and regulations. We'll find out why this is controversial as we talk with a reporter who investigated the story after 7:30. In the meantime, a number of proposals have been tossed around and even passed the state assembly. But much will be left on the cutting room floor in the Senate this year. Here to tell us what's likely to be left undone is our state capitol reporter, Sean Johnson. Sean, thanks for making it to the studio despite the temperatures outside.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning. Well, before we get to that, I wanted to ask you about a tax overhaul. What can you tell us about that?
So we'll talk a bit in a bit about stuff that's not going to happen, but this is something that might happen this year. And you've heard talk of a couple different tax overhauls, really. One's being talked about by the governor is really more of a long-term thing. And he says that he's gathering input for, what would be in his next budget should he win re-election. And that makes some pretty broad changes, depending on how far the governor decides to go. The other thing that Republicans are potentially talking about doing this spring, and they're in here through the end of March, is they want to have potentially a tax holiday. It'd be two weekends a year in which targeted items would be exempt from the sales tax.
What kinds of targeted items?
I think clothing is one of the things that they're talking about, but the idea is that if you have a targeted items like this or a couple of weekends a year, you could maybe sort of prime the pump, get people out there spending. But anytime you're talking about a tax holiday that's just a couple weekends a year, the retort against that is that people are just going to not spend money during other days, save it up knowing that those days are coming. And so it's not exactly going to be an economic boon for the state.
And yet the governor is in favor of it.
The governor's, I haven't heard the governor weigh in on that one exactly. Okay. What the governor's talking about is something a lot bigger. And so this is, you've heard him talk a bit back and forth about this, and you'll probably, if you're looking to the year ahead, I think this is something that he'll want to talk about throughout most of the year as he faces re-election. He wants to, or he's considering taking the state income tax, lowering it, possibly eliminating it, and in order to make up the revenue, possibly increasing the state sales tax. It's an approach that GOP governors in other states have been trying recently. It would be a big change in Wisconsin. Wisconsin state government gets most of its money from the income tax. And broadly speaking, here's the governor talking about why he's considering this as an approach.
At a time where states without income taxes are driving much of the prosperity in this country, and at a time where we have a relatively low sales tax, to me, part of any discussion should include some reductions in spending, but you can't make it all up through that alone. And so part of the equation is, if you get rid of the income tax, could you replace some of that with the sales tax? And if so, what's the right level and what's the right way to do it?
So pretty big change, if Wisconsin were to go that route. And really, the critics sort of seize on the differing natures of the sales tax and the income tax. The income tax, especially in Wisconsin, is a progressive tax. It's based on how much you can afford to pay. So if you make less, you pay a lower rate. As you make more money, your rate gets higher. Not the percentage of your income, but your rate gets higher. So the sales tax, much different beast. I mean, it's, you pay, no matter how much you make, you pay the same rate when you go to the store to buy stuff, whether you're rich or poor. And so the sales tax is, while it may be viewed as fair by people, it's, in essence, a regressive tax in some ways. And so actually, sorry about that.
Well, I was going to ask if about the allocation of funds. Is the allocation different, whether it's an income tax versus money raised from a sales tax?
The allocation,
sorry. Toward other resources and money brought back into the state, or?
Yeah, well, it would be, you would have to raise the sales tax pretty considerably in order to make up money from that you would lose from the state income tax, since the income tax is really the driver of the state budget. As far as state government's concerned, you got the income tax and the sales tax are the biggies, but the income tax is very important to the operations of state government. So if you're going to take that away, or eliminate it or reduce it considerably, you're talking big changes in the way that state government is run. And so, you know, that's why, even though this isn't something that the legislature is going to be taking up in the coming few months, the potential that they would take it up in the next session is a big deal. Hmm. So the governor, aware of this idea that the sales tax, a little more regressive, and then the income tax. He was asked about that recently in an interview. You know, what do you do about that? I mean, the sales taxes everyone the same. The progressive income tax, at least in, you know, the way it's designed, it's you know, structured more to protect people based on their income. And he floated the idea that potentially what he could do is have you could exempt certain items. Like right now, the state exempts food, groceries, from the sales tax. And he said maybe you could exempt more essentials, something like clothing.
If, and I say it's a big if because this is just poking ideas around, but if a sales tax were to be a factor in that, there might be ways to carve out even more than just food, prescription drugs, maybe even clothing up to a certain level. If you carved out essentials, then in a way you might actually have something that essentially says above that, for anybody, no matter what their income, you're paying for consumption of non-essentials. It would protect people who have the lowest incomes the most if you could carve out those basic essentials out there. And then say, you know, if you want to spend more on things that may not be essential to your life and your livelihood, well, then the sales tax is going to be a part of it.
So that's, you know, that's something I haven't heard him talk about elsewhere. And I asked a couple tax experts about, you know, what the implications might be, how that might go. They both said it could have its problems. Todd Berry was with the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. Taxpayers Alliance basically favors a simpler tax code. If you're going to, you know, cut taxes, they want broad-based tax relief. So Todd Berry says the problem is if you start taking out more exemptions like this for clothing, for example, it gets harder to make up the lost revenue that you're going to lose when you cut the income tax.
What other states that have gone in this direction do is they tax more things, not fewer things. So to the degree that you're carving out even more items from taxation, you make it, on the margin, more difficult to get the job done.
And then John Peacock with the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. It's a group that really focuses its efforts on helping people, you know, low-income people who necessarily, who they feel would be hit hardest by a sales tax increase. John Peacock says that the problem with this is that if you make some goods exempt, it increases the sales tax burden on other goods potentially.
The more you carve out, the greater you have to increase the rate on the things that are left. Carve out clothing, but then does that mean a higher rate for your utilities, your phone bill and your electricity and gas bill? Does it mean a higher rate on other household items that you have to buy?
And so, I mean, I would stress again that the governor is throwing all this stuff out there as kind of discussion points, especially this one. He said just kind of throwing ideas out there.
Poking ideas around.
Poking ideas around, yes, his words. So,
but of course, when the governor talks, people listen because obviously he has a lot of influence in how these things go. Has anyone done the math or estimated what the overall revenue loss would be if changing from rolling back the income tax and altering the state income tax, relying on that instead?
Yeah, it's I wish I had it right in front of me. I want to say it's around $8 billion if you're talking about getting rid of the income tax. So it's sizable, and I'm, you know, for you to make it up with the sales tax entirely, you're talking about a sizable jump from the 5.5% sales tax now to double-digit sales tax, a double-digit percentage.
Mm-hmm. And have you heard from our legislators at all talking about this? Is this being rolled around in the halls of the Assembly or the Senate?
This is a trial balloon that Republicans have floated a few times now, or a couple times anyway. But it seems like it's mostly coming from the governor's office thus far. I mean, when he was first sworn in or before he was sworn in, his revenue secretary, Rick Chandler, kind of tossed the idea around there. It had the look or the feel of a trial balloon, kind of see what people thought about it, and it didn't go anywhere. Mike Hipsch, the Department of Administration secretary, was talking to, I think it was the Counties Association a little while back, a few months back, and he kind of just openly pondered, well, what would you do if you got rid of the income tax? You'd have to raise the sales tax by this much. And again, he said, I was just answering a question, but it had kind of the feel of a trial balloon. And so now you hear the governor being really more open about it. I haven't heard it coming so strongly from the legislature. They had a committee that met, Assembly Republicans did, had a committee that met and talked a lot about, you know, big tax changes. And then, you know, they decided not to go this route. It would be a pretty big change. Even if they don't go this route, one benefit for the governor is he's got an election coming up this year. It kind of lets him, I mean, this is something he doesn't mind talking about. I think the fact that he's bringing it up so it signals that he wouldn't mind if this is the focus of the discussion in 2014. You know, candidates kind of like to dictate the terms of the debate. This is a big issue, and so it's natural to talk about it, but also helps him kind of steer the discussion.
We're talking with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, about what's ahead this year in the state legislature. And quite possibly a little bit of nothing. We'll find out after the break. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to add to the discussion, you can call them in at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. If you have any questions, perhaps, about some of the ideas being floated around or any other thoughts on some of the issues being brought up by the legislature. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, in for Joy Cardine, and we're talking with our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, about what will and won't be accomplished in the legislature this year. You can join the conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Well, we heard earlier in the hour, Sean, that there might not be a lot of activity within the state Senate. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, there's a bunch of bills that passed the state assembly recently, some of them controversial, some of them certainly attention-grabbing as far as public's concerned. And, you know, just quite a few that it sounds like in an interview with the Associated Press, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald just said, we don't know if we have the votes. We think we're probably going to pass on these. And so, a couple of those are abortion-related bills, always a hot-button issue. Mm-hmm. And the Senate had a very, lively session last year when they took up the bill that would require women seeking abortions to get ultrasounds first. And they've got some elections coming up this year. And, you don't know if those are... I think, in this business, elections are always a factor. And the closer you get to those elections, it drives decisions. But Senator Fitzgerald says that on a couple of these abortion bills, he just doesn't know if they're going to take it up. One of those would prohibit public workers' health insurance plans from covering abortions and exempt religious organizations from providing insurance coverage for contraceptives. And the other would ban abortions based on whether the fetus is male or female, which is referred to as sex-selective abortion. Those passed the assembly. Doesn't look like they're going to come up in the Senate. Senator Fitzgerald says he's not sure they have the votes.
And we have also heard a lot about a speed limit bill, raising the speed limit on our highways to 70 miles an hour, right?
Right. And And as of right now, we are a little bit of an island in Wisconsin because all of our neighbors, you know, everyone that juts up next to us has a 70-mile-per-hour speed limit on rural interstates now. Illinois was the most recent one. They just changed their speed limit to 70 on January 1 in rural interstates. There's a proposal that passed the state assembly that would do that, passed with a mixture of Republican and Democratic votes. Senator Fitzgerald says he's not sure that's going to get a vote in the Senate. Really hasn't said much about it. And if you want to talk about not saying much about it, Governor Walker was asked, you know, what do you think about this bill? Here's what he had to say.
And for me, like a lot of these other bills, it just hasn't been on my radar.
And I don't know if that was pun intended there. I don't think so. But really, he just has no interest in talking about that particular bill. And that's not to say he might not act on it one way or another. I mean, he might not sign it should it come to his desk, but has said nothing about it. And if you look at the lobbying history on this bill, there's no groups that have reported actively lobbying for it. You know, that can often be a kiss of death for a piece of legislation.
That's interesting, because when you maybe try to measure the relative controversial, a measure of these bills, raising the speed limit versus sex-selective abortion, they don't seem to match up in terms of controversy and therefore a liability perhaps in a re-election year.
No, I'm not sure. It seems like the speed limit bill is completely in a completely different category. And
yeah.
So I'm not sure why there's such a lack of interest in the Senate. Not that I don't mean that to say like, gosh, this is a great idea. Why aren't they taking this up? I mean, it's really notable how little they want to say about it. And so it looks like for at least, you know, another year or so, it's going to stay 65 in Wisconsin. That could change. I mean, they could craft a bill in the Senate that does something that gets, you know, commercial carriers, you know, motor carriers on board. It doesn't look like they are at this point. But, this is one of those bills that you have all this arcane stuff in state government that sort of makes people's eyes glass over. I don't think this is one of them. I think people can kind of relate to whether
right.
the speed limit's 65 or 70, but just something that they don't want to talk about too much in the Senate or in the governor's office.
Oh, well, maybe it'll come up again next year.
Maybe.
And double campaign finance contribution limits. Talk about that.
This is something that was kind of a big deal that was cut in the state assembly, actually got Democrats on board, proposal that would do a lot of stuff to election law. It would actually, in addition to doubling campaign finance contribution limits, it would, for the first time, let you register to vote online in Wisconsin. And, you know, as I said, many other things with election law, but those campaign contribution limits would double them so that instead of giving $10,000 to the governor, you could give $20,000 instead of $1,000 to state Senate candidates, $2,000, you know, on up and down the line for every state office. That, you know, to get both parties on board with a bill that does something like that is kind of a big deal in the state assembly. But it looks like, nothing's final. There's a few months to go, but it looks like that might be a deal that was made in the assembly amongst assembly members and goes no further because Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says he's not sure it has the votes in the Senate.
Well, we just have a few minutes left and so much more to talk about, Sean. What else would you like to highlight here?
How many more minutes
do
we have here?
Three. Yeah.
You're talking about the year ahead and what's going to happen. Obviously, it's an election year. And, I think one of the notable things that we'll be watching is we have two Democrats running for statewide office, potentially against the governor, whether it's Mary Burke or Kathleen Vinehout. And neither one of them is really known by the public, whereas you have the governor who has very hardened approval ratings. He's always around 50%. Mm-hmm. I think it's a range of about 46 to 51 in the Marquette poll, but it really doesn't vary too much. People's opinions are hardened about him. So the question is, what's going to happen with these unknown candidates? And, Charles Franklin, Marquette University pollster, says he's going to be watching that in the year to come. And how Democrats and Republicans define Mary Burke or Kathleen Vinehout.
Our October polling showed that over 70% of the public had not yet formed opinions about either of those two. And so how voters come to fill in the blanks, if you will, about new candidates that they haven't thought much about. I think that will be an important part of the year. How do they see their personalities? How do they see their policy issues? What are their strengths and what are their weaknesses?
So, you know, obviously that's something that we'll be watching in the year to come and how that plays out.
And I guess what's the outlook for Governor Walker on this election year?
I think it's sort of a glass half full, glass half empty kind of thing. You could either look at his approval rating and say, that guy's got trouble. He never gets above 51, really. Mm-hmm. Or you can say,
you only need 51.
You really don't. Yeah, you really do. So I think if he starts to move away from that and suddenly we see he's got 55% approval rating in some poll, or, 45 for that matter, then you could sense that there's maybe movement happening in Wisconsin. Otherwise, we feel like the same divided state that we've been for the past few years.
Well, real briefly, we only have about 30 seconds left. Three finalists have been chosen for the UW System presidency.
They have, and that is going to be playing out this week. They're going to be interviewing with a committee of a few regents this week, and actually on they're going to interview today. And then the Board of Regents is expected to make a hiring decision on Thursday. The candidates are, one of them's internal, UW Extension, UW Colleges Chancellor Ray Cross. And we got Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education Executive Vice Chancellor Peter Garland and Kentucky Council on Post-Secondary Education President Robert King vying for that post.
And that'll be a quick decision, and our listeners can hear more about that throughout the day in our state newscast. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
This is the State Capitol Report on the Ideas Network.